What's up? It's Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Under the Hood podcast presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
You're listening to Under the Hood.
Get the ESPN Chicago app for podcasts and the live stream from anywhere. Download in the App Store today.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7 right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Have you missed the baseball show? If you're a Cubs fan or Sox fan or Major League Baseball fan, you should check out the baseball show. That's when we start at 6 o'clock, right after Waddle and Sylvie. I'm there with the baseball show, talking Cubs, talking Sox, talking Major League Baseball, presented by Goose Island Beer Company. And it's on the app as well, the ESPN Chicago app. If you missed it, look, the podcast is there for you. Check out the podcast. Just click the baseball show. Hear what we've been talking about if you missed it. The baseball show every night at 6 right here on ESPN 1000. Oh, it's that time. If it's 8 o'clock hour, on Under the Hood, that means we're talking football. You know why? Because, my friends, it is the summer of football.
The summer of football.
All you can ask for is another opportunity to play this game. It burns in me.
On ESPN 1000.
We don't know how many we got. I don't know how many I got. Make it count, boys.
Holmes flushed out again. Turning the corner. Fires downfield. Only Mahomes.
You throw to score. You run to win.
And here's Saquon Barkley. And he's off to the races. The 30, the 20. Saquon for six.
The summer of football at 8.
Here's a quick throw to Miller. Good throw. Touchdown.
Fake to Armstrong. Run. Book five.
Got time. Launching for the end zone. Jump ball. Touchdown. Terrence Marshall.
The summer of football with Jonathan Hood.
Yeah! That's my dog!
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Oh, my friends, it is time for the summer of football. With me, Jonathan Hood, every night at 8 o'clock, I give you something football as we get closer and closer to football season. We believe. And this is my favorite column all year. Every year, if you go through the archives of our podcast, you can find certain shows called The Quarterback Tiers Are Here. And that is my favorite column. When Mike Sando worked for ESPN, now works for The Athletic, he brought that evaluation over to The Athletic. It's him talking to 50 NFL coaches and evaluators rated 35 veteran quarterbacks this year while providing candid evaluations that appear in the analysis. The process was simple. Coaches and evaluators placed each quarterback in one of five tiers, from the best tier one to the worst tier five. Once ballots were collected, results were averaged to create a ranking. Our unanimous tier one averages 1.00, while the lowest averaged 4.30. Quarterbacks fell into tiers, and they talked about how many votes they received. So, who are the best quarterbacks? Eric, do you have that column in front of you? Are you ready?
Oh, I got it here. I got I printed it for some reason, and now I got like 57 pages in front of me. Yep.
It's a dollar a page, by the way, in the good karma era.
Yeah, all right.
So are you ready? You know this is my favorite column, right? You know I get jacked up for this.
I'm with you. I'm not going to lie. About 2 weeks ago, I went back just to look at the 2019 tiers, just to see like how right and how wrong they got it. And I love the tiers. It really is the most fun article to go through every single year.
So you know I'm going to talk about this for another month, right?
That's what it's here for. Absolutely.
So in the tier one tier, if you've not seen this, from theathletic.com from Mike Sando, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback. He's tied, actually, with Russell Wilson. Interesting. Then the tier one, Mahomes and Wilson are tied. And we know what Mahomes is about. We know they just won the Super Bowl, tier one guy. But tied with Russell Wilson, you know, the quote is, I think he does more for his team than anybody with a bad set of cards. What that comes to, Eric, is Russell Wilson has a rickety offensive line. Their offense is ordinary, but yet Russell Wilson finds a way to come back in games. As a matter of fact, counting playoffs, Wilson is 7-7 in his past 14 starts when the Seahawks allowed more than 24 points. He was 3-26 in those games previously. He actually is good to come back in games when the defense wasn't holding up. So Wilson tied at one is interesting to me.
I don't feel like that it's you could argue Mahomes over him, but if there's one person that can pretty much do every single thing Patrick Mahomes can, it's Russell Wilson. So I really have no problem with him being tied. And that comment was saying he does the most with the worst deck of cards. Couldn't be more realistic.
True. True. And that team will make the playoffs again. but there's a ceiling to their success, too. There's a good football team. Now they add Jamal Adams defensively. But again, we could talk about that another time. But because we got to focus on the tiers. Aaron Rodgers is number three on this list. Okay, I think that the arrow's pointing down for Rodgers, even though this is a team could still win the division, but that's okay. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers. He's a Hall of Famer. Also in Tier 1 is Drew Brees at 4, Deshaun Watson at 5, and that's your top-tier quarterback. So Deshaun Watson, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Tier 1 quarterbacks.
Okay. Interesting nugget was Deshaun Watson in 2019's tier was a Tier 3 quarterback. Now he's all the way up to Tier 1.
I'm going to keep my eyes on that this year.
That might have been a little early to go up Tier 1 already.
Well, you know, I think it's a little high. I'll be honest. I think it's a little high. As much as people want to look at Deshaun Watson, I think that's a little high. And Bill O'Brien might have something to do with that. We will see this season, but I think it's a little high. Tier 2, Tom Brady. Fair. Lamar Jackson in Tier 2. From the Ravens. Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers, in Tier 2.
I'm going to interrupt. Lamar, last year, before his MVP season, was in the lowest tier, Tier 4.
And 2's good.
2 is good. I would have him over Deshaun Watson if we were going to throw him in Tier 1.
That's fair. That's fair. Lamar Jackson is show me again. And then if he shows you again, he'll be a Tier 1 quarterback. I think that's only fair because I don't want to be the guy that says Lamar Jackson is great and then he regresses. It's the NFL. You expect him the Ravens to regress. So maybe they don't roll off like a whole bunch of wins, but still respectable. And people take a side eye to Lamar Jackson like it's his fault. So in Tier 2, he's got something to work with. That's fine. At least he's in the mix. He's not Tier 3 or Tier 4, as you mentioned, Tier 4 last year. So again, for Tier 2, Brady, Lamar Jackson, Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Stafford, okay, at 9, Matt Ryan at 10 from Atlanta, Carson Wentz at 11. Carson did more with less than almost any quarterback in the NFL last year. You see that offense he had toward the end before he got hurt? Dak Prescott is Tier 2. Phillip Rivers is Tier 2. So that was the Tier 2 quarterbacks. Rivers at a Tier 2 is a head-scratcher for me, actually, Eric. Don't believe that.
I don't think last season proved that he should be tier two anymore. He made too many poor decisions and gave the ball away way too much for a team that was on the cusp of competing for him to be in a tier two right now.
Hall of Famer, yeah. Eventually Hall of Famer, but tier two, I don't think so. Tier three, Kyler Murray. Boy, people are high on Murray. He's got to show it again. He was not available last year, so he was not in the tiers because this is his rookie campaign, but he's a tier three. The top of the tier three is Kyler Murray, Kirk Cousins at 15, Jared Goff at 16, Jimmy Garoppolo at 17. Too high or just right for Garoppolo?
I feel like that's the company he kind of deserves to be in. The Kirk Cousins range, I think, is the range that he should land in. And I think Kirk Cousins' middle name is third tier.
The 49ers have a 19-5 record when Garoppolo starts. Okay. Again, a guy that was in the Super Bowl this past season, he's got a chance to grow. Maybe you're crediting the tight end and the running game and not necessarily him.
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm giving too much credit or enough credit, depending on who you think, to Kyle Shanahan is really what it is.
All right. Tannehill at 18 in Tier 3. Cam Newton with the The Patriots now at 19. Derek Carr at 20. Baker Mayfield is a tier 3. He was tier 2 last year, tier 3 this year at 21. Josh Allen is 22 as a tier 3. Teddy Bridgewater, not on the list last year, at 23. Sam Darnold for the Jets, 24. Daniel Jones of the Giants at 25. Nick Foles of the Bears is 26. That was your tier 3 quarterback, with Foles being the bottom of tier 3.
I think a lot of those bottom tier 3, I wouldn't necessarily consider tier 3 quarterbacks. Foles, Sam Darnold, Daniel Jones, Bridgewater maybe. He hasn't proven a lot, but like those to me are not tier 3 type quarterbacks. I think they may be in that tier 4.
The Bridgewater thing we have to keep our eyes on. You remember the reason why he's even going to start for Carolina is because he played so well with the Saints. I mean, he beat the Bears' ass, as you, if you remember.
I believe he went 5-0.
Yeah, so like, and you could say it's a system and not Teddy, but we're going to find out when he's with Carolina. A offensive-friendly system, offensive-friendly coach. We'll see. But he's in that tier 3, and Nick Foles is at number 26 overall. The Bears have two quarterbacks in the survey, and the highest-ranked one is not Mitch Trubisky. Foles, a spectacular run as the Eagles' Super Bowl-winning backup, when contrasted with his failed stints as an opening week starter, cemented his reputation as the ultimate relief pitcher while giving him the edge over Trubisky among voters. I love the quotes here. The anonymous quotes. Ah, here we go, Eric. As bad as Trubisky is, I know Foles is even worse. Just watching him in Jacksonville last year, said one defensive coordinator.
Boy, that sentence right there, it just explains what we're looking at for 2020. That one sentence is everything.
He could have stuck to his backup role, come in as a relief pitcher, but some guys like him and Ryan Fitzpatrick want to be starters, and it gets them exposed. Oof. I want to curse there. You can win with him, but everything has to be right, and you have to play his type of offense. You saw what they did with him when they won the Super Bowl with the Eagles. They went back to Chip Kelly's offense a little bit with a lot of read option, play action off the read option, and then they threw it when they had to throw it. If he has to throw it every down, you're going to lose games. And an offensive forward pass offense for the Bears. The guys, this personnel director says if Foles has to throw it every down, you're going to lose games. All right. Coming up next. So if we've gone through the first three tiers, where's Trubisky? Find out next for the Summer of Football with Jonathan Hood.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Follow on Twitter at @TweetJHood.
Middle of Summer of Football, my favorite column every year from Mike Sando from TheAthletic.com. The reason why it's my favorite is because we get a chance to see where the Bears quarterbacks are versus the best. Again, the best on this list, it's players like Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees and Deshaun Watson. That's the top tier, right? So we already gave you the thoughts about Nick Foles. Foles is number 26 in this list. So now, Eric, we go to tier 4. Marcus Mariota. Boy, they'll never believe in him. He was tier 3 last year. Now he's tier 4. So he's 27th in this list. Tier 4, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Tyrod Taylor's 29. Drew Locke from Denver is 30th. Tied with Gardner Minshew from the Jaguars. And number 32, Mitchell Trubisky. Tier 4, number 32 overall. Well, let's read what people said about Mitch Trubisky. He had a legitimate skill set enough to be drafted in the first round, a head coach said. I don't think anybody will deny that. You just would have hoped a lot of these guys come in the league and they'd get better incrementally. You just saw things on tape, saw some things live where it wasn't getting better. And then the Bears saw that too. They can say what they want, but it's obviously why they brought in Foles. The Bears have scored 17 or more points in only 57% of Trubisky's starts, counting playoffs. That ranks 22nd out of 23 quarterbacks with at least 32 starts over the past three seasons. The Raiders, Derek Carr is the only quarterback ranked lower. Mahomes leads the way at 97%. Oh. How about this from a defensive coach? I don't see any elite trait, says a defensive coach. Trubisky doesn't have a great arm. Josh Allen has a freak show arm. Trubisky is an okay athlete, but he is not the super dynamic athlete. And it just goes on, and a GM says, I think he can function. Is he great? No. But he's as bad as the media portrays him? No. That guy, that makes him a career backup.
Yeah, like that last statement is, can he function? No. The media dumps on him too much, but he can't function. So what is the media supposed to do if he can't function? What? That just screams a non-starter. Like, it screams somebody who doesn't need to be leading a team.
Dude, like he's 32nd, and you wonder, like, what, is there any more on the list? Yes. Dwayne Haskins, who's unproven with Washington at 33. Jarrett Stidham, who's not going to start for the Patriots at 34. Kyle Allen, who's not going to start for the Panthers at 35. And that's the end of the list. He's 32nd out of 35 quarterbacks on this quarterback tiers list.
Out of the GMs and scouts and whoever all votes for this, 8 of them voted him to be in tier 5. There is no tier 5. It doesn't even go that low. But 8 out of the 50 votes were to be in that lowest non-existent tier.
Wow.
But the media is too hard on him.
Here, let's just take a minute and think about this, right? The Bears have a backup who's eventually going to play, and Nick Foles at 26 and Trubisky at 32. We had Stacey Dales from the NFL Network on last week and talking about how Trubisky is working on his mechanics and trying to throw the ball longer, all that kind of stuff. Man, let me tell you something. Whatever happens this season, whenever we have our NFL season, Trubisky is going to start. I don't think there's any question he's going to start. And it's not because I'm like this over-the-top Trubisky fan. It's because Foles is better coming off the bench. So why wouldn't you utilize him that way? And I know that you bring Foles in because clearly you don't believe in Trubisky, but they're going to give Trubisky every opportunity to succeed or fail in the job. Why? Because Ryan Pace needs a win. Over the weekend, when I was working with Dickerson, also, the story came in while we were on the air on Saturday afternoon about Adam Shaheen. Shaheen, who I did not even understand from the get-go. Why is he even being drafted from Ashland College, right? I understand Ashland Street on the south side. I've been at Ashland a lot there, but I've never seen that college. And so you're taking a flyer on what some call, quote-unquote, baby Gronk or whatever the hell, right? And so Shaheen gets traded to Miami for pretty much nothing. So you draft him high because you're taking a flyer on someone from an unproven college and he becomes nothing. So now you unload one tight end out of the clown car of tight ends that you already have. Good job, Ryan Pace. That's exactly what you want. You're trading him in the Saturday news dump so no one would notice that Shaheen's no longer with the football team. It's just, but then Trubisky, here he is, right? What's gonna happen is that there will be some that look at Trubisky and say, well, you know, he just didn't have the weapons. I mean, what was he supposed to do? I mean, he was he's got Allen Robinson. That's just one wide receiver. But I mean, there's no Anthony Miller. We don't know how good he could be. And then they never had a tight end for him. Didn't have a good running game. Offensive line was rickety. Many teams have an issue with their offensive line, but they find a way to overcome. And for Trubisky, it's not just the city being down on him. It's just that the whole offense, and while everyone is flourishing, while so many teams are flourishing offensively, finding a way to get the ball in the end zone, the Bears are going sideways, sideline to sideline, instead of going into the end zone trying to get points. That number, I will quote until the cows come home, of how the Bears scored 17 or more points in only 57% of Trubisky's starts, counting the playoffs. How in the world are the Bears going to get better from that? They don't even have a top-tier quarterback. That guy, as you mentioned, Eric, eight tier 5 votes with no tier 5.
Unbelievable. So in that draft,
crazy
first pick, Ryan Pace trades up to take Mitch Trubisky. 32nd on this tier. Some people think he should be in a tier that doesn't exist. Second round pick, his next pick, he trades up to take Adam Shaheen, who now he trades and we get a 6th round pick back. So that whole draft completely just lighted on fire. It's done.
It's a failure and a firing.
It's exactly what it's going to turn out to be.
Yeah.
It's firing.
Bears are not going to win the division this upcoming season. They had to compete with the Vikings and the Packers. I don't believe in the whole Lions getting better thing. They'll probably get better, but incrementally. But, you know, like, again, here's how I approach our Chicago sports teams. It's not based on the Packers or the Vikings. It's based on the NFC. And then it's based on the rest of the NFL. Think about Foles and Trubisky, how Foles has had success coming off the bench, but limited. Not the long-time answer. Trubisky having trouble being able to get this offense or try to get a semblance of offense more than 17 points a game. This is where we are right now. So this is reality smacking you in the face. That's why I love these quarterback tiers and hear what other people say. It's one thing for Cap and Carmen and me and Sylvie and all these other people to talk about Trubisky because we're close to it. You watch it every day. But the perspective of those that are watching this Bears team from outside of the state and saying, that guy sucks, that's all you need. It's one thing for me to say it because I'm telling you the truth. You've seen it. And even for any Trubisky truther that just thinks, well, he could get better, well, let's see it. Everyone else says, you know, he's got an issue. This offense has an issue with him under center. So it just, we'll talk about this because I'll be talking about this for another month. Seriously, because I think it's fascinating. 32nd Trubisky. This will be the undoing of Ryan Pace. It really will. The news coming across about Rick Renteria, he is not positive for COVID-19. He will return to manage tomorrow the doubleheader for the Sox against the Indians. He went there because he had issues with, it seemed like he had an issue with a nasal congestion and had a little bit of a cough. So he wanted to make sure that wasn't COVID-19. It was not. And so he went to the hospital, but he's going to manage tomorrow for the White Sox. One of the huge icons in America, John Lewis passed away. We'll talk about Congressman Lewis coming up next as part of our Tales from the Hood segment right here on UTH.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Under the Hood on ESPN 1000.
Boom, boom, boom.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. A really solemn day, not just today, but the last week or so, regarding John Lewis, the son of sharecroppers who survived a brutal beating by police during a landmark 1965 march in Selma, Alabama, to become a towering figure of the civil rights movement and longtime U.S. congressman. He passed away after a 6-month battle with cancer at the age of 80. Kevin Merida, the senior vice president and editor-in-chief of The Undefeated, theundefeated.com, go to his column and read Kevin's thoughts about the late John Lewis. He joins me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Kevin, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to get your thoughts on you meeting John Lewis, because I'd love to know what it was like to be in the same proximity to such a historical figure like John.
Well, I met Congressman Lewis before he was a congressman, when he was running for Congress in Atlanta against Julian Bond, his really good friend and civil rights colleague, you know, back in 1986. And it was really an historic, you know, congressional match, and really bitter in many ways, because, you know, they fought, it was a hard fought competition. Some things were said in that campaign, and you had people on both sides that knew each other, and it took a while to repair that friendship. And Lewis emerged and won that race and never looked back, and you know, remained in Congress throughout that whole time. I was a young political reporter then, and so it was one of the early kind of, you know, national races that I covered. I was working at the Dallas Morning News at the time. Mm-hmm. And at over time, you know, when you meet someone when they're coming up, you know how it is. It's the same with sports. You meet people when they're coming up, and then you're able to maintain relationships throughout the course of their careers as they rise and get larger and larger. I mean, you know, Lewis had made his reputation. He certainly had tremendous sacrifice as a young civil rights leader with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and certainly as a confidant of King's and advisor, lieutenant of King's. But when he got to be in Congress, his history and his weight just kind of expanded, you know, and they often call him the conscience of Capitol Hill, and he was somebody who, because of all of his activity in the civil rights movement, as you mentioned, skull was fractured and beaten on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, but many other times. I think he was arrested something like 40 times in a six-year period in the 1960s. He was really sacrificed, and I think there was great respect for him because of that. It was that he had helped to change the country, and there was reverence for him in his workplace.
Kevin, what did you learn from him on a personal level?
Well, I thought he was always down to earth and someone who didn't really change. You know, he didn't fundamentally change. He was he came with grace and humility, and as someone who, you know, did not like wear his gravitas on his sleeve. You know, he walked lightly. You know, and I thought it was an important thing, and you know, and just from the human race standpoint, that, you know, I never saw him look away from anybody. No one was more important than another person in a room, no matter how big the room was, how many luminaries. He was always accessible to people. You know, there's a great scene, you know, in Don Porter's really brilliant documentary, John Lewis, Good Trouble, where he's dancing to Pharrell's Happy, you know, and it's just kind of like a sweet moment, you know. I don't think Lewis would say he's the greatest dancer in the world, but it was a reflection of just how he was. He was just comfortable in his skin, comfortable around everyone, and you know, I saw him. I'm not sure if this was the last time. It was in 2018. It was a while, because I'm not covering Capitol Hill. As you noted, I'm with ESPN, and in the times that I get to see him or not, if I bump into him and in places in D.C. But during 2008 commencement address at Boston University, you know, I'm a Boston University trustee. And we were, you know, I was around them, and I had a great view as a trustee from watching behind him and watching him address the crowd. So I could see the reaction, you know, of the kids. And afterwards, you know, we had a few words, and that one I did take a picture of with him. I usually didn't do things like that, but it was something about, you know, you have, you know, instinct that when you're around, you know, people that are historic figures, they're not going to be around forever, you know. And you know, we took a picture, he and my wife and me, and he said something to me that really, you know, touched me. He told my wife, I don't think he had met my wife at that point before Donna, and he said that, you know, this man right here, you know, I've been knowing him for many, many years, and he had never changed. And it was irony, because that's what I thought about him, you know, that he had never changed, you know. And I just thought that, you know, when a lot of times when, you know, I've covered politicians and many people over time, and I have seen people change, you know. I've seen people, the bigger they are, you know, they get less accessible, and it's understandable, whether you're, you know, a Hollywood figure or athlete or people who are in the public eye. Sometimes the public eye, you know, alters who you are and how you present to the public. But I never saw him change that way.
Kevin Merida from TheUndefeated.com with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. When you hear that phrase, good trouble, what does that phrase mean to you?
Well, it means that, you know, sometimes you have to shake up the system. You have to disrupt the status quo, you know, and it was one of his favorite phrases, you know, to get in good trouble. It was like, yeah, we're going to get in trouble, but it's trouble that's going to lead to good. You know, sometimes you have to do things to shake up your country, shake up your community, you know, shake up your workplace, you know, and to do something that's going to make us all better. And I think he certainly, you know, he spilled a lot of blood of his blood, you know, to help make this country better. You know, we can just be grateful that of his service. And, you know, he wasn't alone. There are many, many, you know, luminaries of the civil rights movement, people who are foot soldiers out there on the streets marching and really, you know, giving their lives to help us. And so, hey, we could be sitting here having a good conversation, Jonathan, me and you, you know.
Right.
That's not to be taken for granted. You know, I know I don't. And sometimes I think in this, you know, microwave society where we get upset when people get trolled on Twitter and feelings hurt. And, you know, you have to kind of sometimes just think that there were people who, you know, they had to be fearful of their lives, you know, just to go into a store or you know, Thurgood Marshall trying to, you know, go into a courtroom and come into a town to challenge Jim Crow legally and under death threat, and people would sneak him in the homes and in our profession, you know, even, you know, those who covered the civil rights movement, you know, particularly black journalists going down south and places, not being able to stay everywhere, having to be careful and reporting under fear of hey, maybe them getting lynched. So, you know, it's a long way from, you know, being trolled, right, on social media.
Yeah.
And John Lewis, certainly, he gave the ultimate sacrifice. You know, he ultimately gave his life, you know, and so that we could have a better life.
Kevin, it's interesting in your piece, John Lewis lived a life of grace and humility. The civil rights icon led until he could lead no more. It's up to us now. That's on TheUndefeated.com right now. What resonated with me in the piece is what you talked about regarding Boston University, how John resonated with young people. The idea that John Lewis is a civil rights icon is one thing, but it goes to show you, and just yet another example, is that young people do pay attention. And you can see the marches across this country. In Portland, by the way, their porch light's still on, Kevin. Every night there's something happening and popping off in Portland regarding Black Lives Matter. I just wonder what John, toward the end, would have thought about what's going on now and whether or not he had a thought of what could be the future bring when it comes to Black Lives Matter, the movement, the marches, and things that are happening in our communities.
Yeah, and even though in the last months of his life and he was frail and not is getting around as much, but he did make his way out, you know, and to be among the protesters, I know, in D.C. And I think he had great admiration for the young people who were coming up. They were doing a lot of the things that he was doing. You know, he's a really young guy when he first started. He was in his teens. Mm-hmm. And he was running. He spoke on the March on Washington, you know, one of the landmark marches in this country. He was 23 years old, you know. And we forget how young these leaders were. And we see a lot of this out in the streets today and in different places in the wake of Breonna Taylor's killing and George Floyd's killing and Ahmaud Arbery. We see a lot of young people, you know, doing the same kinds of things that the protesters of a different generation were. And I think there's a lot of reverence, certainly from those who are organizers of Black Lives Matter movement and other protesters. I think great reverence for for John Lewis. And I know there are a lot of young people over time that, you know, like to talk to Lewis. You know, there was a really interesting, just segueing a bit, Jonathan, an interesting interview my friend Roland Martin had with where he had talked to Colin Kaepernick, and he connected them together, Colin Kaepernick and John Lewis, and wanted to they wanted to meet each other, and they did by phone, and Roland connected them phone to phone. John Lewis was with Roland, and he had Kaepernick on the phone, and it was, you could just see that mutual respect of just from those two and what Colin Kaepernick had done by making his protests in the NFL and what John Lewis had done many years before. It was a mutual respect.
You know, Kevin, I found earlier today, I was looking up where John Lewis was on the card for the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom in 63. Mm-hmm. So John Lewis was sixth on the bill, and Dr. King was 16th. It's just, you know, it's just amazing, I'm sure, for John Lewis to be, first of all, on that bill. The other thing is that I would never want to be Philip Randolph for Dr. Mays after Dr. King, because I wouldn't know what to say after King spoke.
Not at all. Nobody wants to be at any of those. Absolutely not.
That is amazing to see a young John Lewis. It shows also the confidence that King and that circle had in John Lewis for him to be able to speak on such an occasion in 63.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that there, you know, this has been written about a lot, that there was questions and, you know, worry from the White House, and that this would hurt, that John Lewis was going to say something really fiery and incendiary, and they begged him, you know, so that Kennedy could get a little more room, you know, the Kennedy and Johnson administration get a little more room and try to, persuade the votes that they needed to pass some of the civil rights laws that came later. And Lewis talks about how they had gotten to him. It's interesting that at the time, you know, he was seen as somebody to have to worry about, you know. And I think in later years, you know, I think Lewis was seen probably as more of somebody that could be a peacemaker and not, you know, the way he was thought of back then. And I think over time, certainly, you know, Lewis, even in Congress, he certainly, you know, he was somebody that stood up to everyone. But over time, I think that there was this, he had achieved a kind of stature that, regardless of whether or not you were his opponent across the aisle, he was somebody that people, you know, revered. You know, there was a respect, at least, that, hey, he had been some places and done some things and had some experiences that others didn't in Congress. And so there was a certain kind of level of, okay, we have opposition here. We don't agree, but we do have mutual respect for. And you saw this, by the way, when he died. You know, you saw Republicans, Democrats, you saw all kinds of people speaking out, former President George W. Bush and others speaking admirably of John Lewis.
Lastly, for someone who worked at Capitol Hill, I have to ask you, because you just mentioned it, how often was it for someone of Lewis's ilk to be able to cross the aisle and to be able to get things done? You know, Lewis did not attend, I want to say, Bush's inauguration, and definitely not President Trump's inauguration, right, but yet he still was crossing the aisle to be able to get things done, including the Black Museum in Washington, D.C., if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that, you know, Congress is a very polarizing place. I mean, you know, politics in general is much, very polarizing kind of institution, very, very difficult to to get things done. And that's been regardless of what party's been in office and control what house and control what presidency. It's just been hard to do. But I think one thing about John Lewis, and you mentioned the museum because that is a really important institution, and the Museum of African American History and Culture on the Mall, to have that building on the Mall as a testament to the struggle and progress and ultimately for African Americans in the country, is really something special. You know, there are not many places, the National Mall, and it's in a prime location for all of those, and people travel all over the world. You know, when dignitaries come in, presidents and prime ministers and other people, is one of the places that people want to come see. And I think that, you know, it took something like 15 years for John Lewis and certainly others to press for the authorization to create that museum, but it was a tremendous achievement that it does exist.
The piece is entitled John Lewis Lived a Life of Grace and Humility. That is on theundefeated.com. Check out the column written by our guest, Kevin Merida. Kevin, I'm glad you spent some time with us in Chicago. This is a sad day for many of us, for someone who was cast such a wide shadow when it comes to civil rights and more. So I'm glad you spent some time with me here in Chicago.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate you having me.
Kevin Merida with us from theundefeated.com on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.